We have already come across John the Baptist, we might say twice. There are two parts in the earlier section that touch on John and his witness from verse 6 to 8, and then also in verse 15, where John, we learn, bore witness. That is the great stress of both of these occasions when John has been introduced. That's why he came, we are told. You read about him in the other gospel accounts as well, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and they all do give some space to him. They tell some at greater length some of the things that he did, how he was born even, and also some of the things that he taught. I think, though, it is in John's Gospel that we have the clearest explanation of why John appeared at all. Why is it that we learn of him? What was his purpose? That purpose will be given some explanation in the other Gospels. We don't have time, we're not going to go into that now. But when we come to John's Gospel, we find very few of these details. But we do find enough about him that tells us a very important thing. As we read from verse 19, there is also more said about him from verse 29 through to 42, and we'll deal with those, I think, another time. But here already we find the sharpest focus being placed entirely on his testimony. What does follow is summed up in the first line of verse 19. This, John the Apostle, John the Evangelist, says, this is the testimony of John. What follows is his testimony. And that's a key part of all the thinking of this gospel writer. That's the main thrust of his purpose as he selected the material that he's laid out for us in this gospel. The things that he gives us are all there to bear witness to the Son, to bring the reader to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And that is his purpose here. He brings out especially the testimony of John, the testimony concerning Jesus. The first part of it is that John has to explain himself to the people around him. Jesus has not yet appeared on the scene, although John is already telling of his coming. Yes, John has to tell about himself, but in all the parts where he talks about himself, that's what this section is, 19 to 28. While he talks about himself, it is all in terms of his work of preparation for the Lord, for the Christ. And that's what we see as we look at the different parts of John's replies to those who questioned him. In every part of these things, he relates what he has to say to that someone else. We find this in what is called here his confession. We might also say that he gives an explanation of his identity. Then there is, thirdly, a question about his baptism. And there is an amazing statement demonstrating his humility. These are the four aspects that I would highlight this morning. His confession, John's identity, John's baptism, and John's humility. So let us look at these things and cover this passage. John's confession then, first of all. In verse 20, he confessed and did not deny, but confessed, I and not the Christ. I do think we get the idea as we read through, you might read through those words fairly quickly, we get some of the idea of what John is saying. But if you stop a minute and you lay out those words in verse 20, it is somewhat unusual. So let's stop and look for a moment. what we are supposed to understand as this John, the writer of the Gospel, he views this as a positive confession. He says, he confessed. And second, he confessed, but confessed. It's a positive confession. Although the words of John, in answer to the question that was put to him, are in the negative. It was a denial. I am not the Christ. Yet the author says he did not deny. What is all of this about? The Baptist, John, did not deny. He did not deny that he was resisting any claim to be the Christ. He would make no such claim. He would not accept any claim that was made on his behalf. And he was not going to deny that. It was as though the people were implying a question. But don't you want to be the Christ? He says, I'm not. And I will not hesitate to say so. But why should he have said all that? The delegation from the Jews in verse 19, the Jews sent priests and Levites to ask him, who are you? They did not ask him directly, it seems, if he was the Christ. The gospel, this gospel record is very bald in its telling of the story. There's not a lot of detail. Remember though, the background is that John had been at the Jordan and the crowds were coming to hear him preach, and they would respond as he called them to also be baptized for the remission and repentance of sin. They came to hear him preach, and there were crowds doing that. And it was because of that, surely, that these Jews, as they're called here, they decided that they needed to interrogate, to investigate, to hear it from himself. And they came with one specific question, who are you? You see, it's the Jews sending certain people on their behalf, priests and Levites. The Jews is an expression that John the Apostle, in his writing, uses far more than any of the other writers do. And by and large, not in every case, but by and large, it is an expression that he uses to express, to mark out those who were hostile to Jesus. And more often than not, they, who were hostile, were the leaders of the nation. In this case, primarily religious leaders. And here they are represented before John as the priests and Levites. It would seem then that probably the Sanhedrin or the council, they had seen and heard enough to concern them to find out more about this man, John. And it's that background, the crowds coming and all that was going on, and surely rumors spreading. That's why the council, the Jews, and sent their priests and Levites to interrogate him. John himself was no fool. Their question was superficially quite innocuous. Who are you? Who are you? Whichever way they expressed it. It seems he was able to detect the underlying anxiety on their part. Is this the Christ? Is this the Messiah that we, our nation, have been waiting for? He was a remarkable man. He had a remarkable following. And there were perhaps rumors going around that this is who he was, the Christ, the one that had been promised. John perceives this, and that's the question he answers. But remember, this is a delegation from the religious leaders. And for many people, there may well have been a temptation. Here is a possibility of some recognition. He'd been out on his own. He was living in the desert. And here he was, come to the Jordan River. And he stayed there, and the crowds came to him. But he was not taken in, not as a great preacher, not as touched on later as a great prophet. The religious leaders had not taken him to themselves. Here they were, though, asking a question. Does this give him the chance of some recognition? But John does not take that. Doesn't take it that way. He adheres firmly to his testimony. He knows what he has to do, and he drives it all the way through. He will not be distracted. He will not be tempted aside with any kind of authorized recognition that might be a temptation for many in a case like this. Instead of that, he sets out a firm denial. I am not the Christ. But as he does so, this serves as his confession. When you do get down to verse 27, John's own words show where all of this fits in. He has already been preaching of the one who is coming after him. It is he. He talks about this one in verse 26, who is among you. It is he who coming after me. He phrases it in a way that is he's calling to mind the things that he's already been saying. He has been preaching about the one who will come after him, but who is preferred before me is greater than he is. And here in verse 20, in his confession, he is insisting he will not change his tune just because at last the leaders of the religious nation have come to speak with him. He will not change his tune. He knows who he is. And he says, I am not the Christ. Although by implication, the Christ is still to come. And perhaps even that John does know who he is. That, in a way, is what John's confession is all about. Not me, but another. So it begins here, the things, as I spoke about with the young folk earlier. Later on, Jesus said, we're told this in Mark and Matthew and in Luke, Jesus said, among those born of women, there has not risen one greater than John the Baptist, or as Luke would put it, there has not risen a greater prophet. Among those born of women, there has not risen one greater than John the Baptist. Jesus tells us that John the Baptist was an incredible person. The history tells us he drew massive crowds and a lot of questions. He did a great work. He was a fearless man, a remarkable man. But this very remarkable man was most remarkable of all because he knew that himself he was less than the Christ. And he would confess it firmly, without hesitation. I am not the Christ. So we read of John's confession. But this led his questioners to ask him something else. And this brings us to what I'm calling John's identity. He confesses he is not the Christ, but who is he? What then? Verse 21. Are you Elijah? He said, I am not. Are you the prophet? That's the prophet they must have had in mind, the prophet that Moses had spoken of. That's why we read there, just to remind us ourselves of Moses' teaching in Deuteronomy, and one that therefore the nation had been looking for a long, long time, the great prophet from amongst his brethren. And John says, no, I'm not the prophet. But if he's not the Christ, who is he? I don't know if it's just the way that John the Apostle wrote these things or recorded them, but it does seem as though John himself, the Baptist, is getting a bit short. He's certainly shortening his answers. He's getting more and more blunt about his answers. I'm not. No. Quite simply. Those earlier unspoken inquiries regarding the Messiah, with that in mind, now they are looking for the most special prophets that they've been expecting. Elijah is raised here because in Malachi it's made known that when the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes, in other words, when the Lord himself would come, Elijah would come first. the interpretation was that this would be the day of the Messiah. So if John is not the Christ, the Messiah, then maybe he's Elijah preparing the way. If you know the Gospels, you'll remember that Jesus later on also said that John is the Elijah who is to come. And there are a couple of other remarks in a similar vein. For John says, no, I'm not Elijah. Jesus says, yes, he is Elijah. Can they both be right? Well, I think they can, because they mean different things, and they're dealing with different people. You see, John, as he answers here, I think he is very much aware that the perception around him at the time was that the original Elijah would return. Do you remember Elijah? The children perhaps remember how did Elijah die? Did Elijah die? No, he didn't. What happened to Elijah? Anyone know? Remember the fiery chariot that came and took him away? And his, yes, Angus? Took away in the whirlwind, yeah. He didn't die. And so the people of the time were thinking, well, that prophecy must literally come true, that same Elijah is going to come back somehow. And John was answering quite simply that. No, I'm not Elijah. I'm John the Baptist. I'm not that Elijah. Jesus had another sense to that. He knew what the prophecy was about. He knew that a great prophet would lead the way, that it would be one of the equivalent greatness, if you like, of Elijah. But John's purpose was another thing as well, that he was intent on not drawing attention to himself. They were looking for Elijah. That would have been a tremendous distraction to the real Christ who was to come. John was avoiding that. He was cutting them short. That is not me, he says. But once his work was done, he was gone by this time. Jesus himself doesn't hesitate to honor John for his part in the coming of the kingdom amongst men. Wasn't Elijah? Are you then the prophet? The prophet Moses foretold. The Jews then were holding a distinction between the Christ and the prophet. But when you come to the book of Acts, you read that the church very quickly realized that Christ himself, Jesus, was the great prophet that Moses had in mind, or that God had spoken of to Moses. But in this context, John once again bluntly rejects any such suggestion. He does not wish to talk about himself. He has something else to say. And that's what he has to do, because they were getting a bit frustrated, it seems. Who are you? Same question. Who are you? They wanted some kind of answer. All he was giving them was no, negatives. Well, who are you? We've got people to go back to and report to. What can we tell them? Tell us. What do you say about yourself? And there's a beautiful thing here, I think. They're completely lost for ideas. And so what does John do? Yes, they've been talking about the Messiah who was promised them in Scripture. They've talked about Elijah who was promised, the prophet who was promised, all of these promised in Scripture. They missed one. John says, that's me. I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Make straight the way of the Lord, as the prophet Isaiah said. The more I read these verses closely, the more I'm impressed with John's spirit. One of the reasons, perhaps, why Jesus regarded him so highly. What do you say about yourself? The beautiful thing is, what do you say about yourself? I'm a voice crying about the Lord coming. Not me, but him. Just a voice. Not a person. Not somebody with a name. Just the voice, and effectively the voice of the Lord, telling that the Lord is coming. He's a perfect herald of the coming King. The herald would go into the city maybe with a trumpet, and he would shout and announce, "The king is coming." Did the people gather around the herald and say, "Right, let's look after you and do all sorts of things"? They say, "Get out of the way, the king is coming." It's the king you want, the king you need. And that's what he says, "This is what I'm doing." It is in the wilderness, yes, where he was literally perhaps, but perhaps even more so spiritually. As we see, he says, "Make straight the way of the Lord." I'm very struck by this at such an early stage in the gospel. If you took it literally and took the picture that this comes from, of a herald going before the king, it was to say to the people, you need to get out on that road, on that way that the king is coming, and make sure it is clean and tidy, it is straight, it is all the obstacles are removed. Perhaps also meant that you go along with your soldiers and you make sure there are no ambushes or anything like that. You prepare the way that the king can come through. And you give him that honor. That would be it literally, if you like. But even the priests and the Levites knew that such a prophecy concerned their Lord, their God. They knew that he was a spirit. This is not a literal issue. Surely it is therefore the spiritual obstacles that must be cleared away. What do we find through the gospel? The Jews. The Jews keep coming at him. They keep trying to ambush him with their tricky questions. They keep trying to put obstacles in their way. They are an obstacle to themselves. They become their own stumbling blocks. It's already signaled the very beginning, and that they would not hear, they would not understand this call from the Lord as he sent out his herald, his messenger before him. I must move on. In verse 24, it seems to be a reference to what has gone before, where I have been talking about the Jews as the council, the Sanhedrin. Verse 24, those who were sent were from the Pharisees. But when you start to look at the whole passage, you realize that it seems like another group. The first group have had their answer. This is who I am. That's what they could take back to the Jews who had sent them. But now we're the Pharisees. As so often, it's almost like this: there were different parties would come to Jesus. One would ask a question, and he would give a good answer, and then the others would think, "Well, we know a better trick, a better question, so we'll ask that." But it seems like there was a genuine concern on the part of the Pharisees, again trying to perhaps to try and trip up John to some degree as well. So here were the Pharisees that come. They wanted to say their piece. Here is this self-proclaimed voice of one crying in the wilderness, who had been baptizing for some time. And so they raise a concern about this baptism. Let's look at John's baptism for a moment. There was his confession, there's his identity, the voice, and then his baptism. They ask about his authority for this baptizing. Why do you baptize if you are not the Christ, nor Elijah, nor the prophet? Just a voice crying in the wilderness. Once again, the Pharisees are a group that frequently appear in conflict with Jesus through the rest of the gospel records. In some ways, perhaps they need to be respected because they were. And they began by trying to be very diligent about God's law and God's way for his people. But it had become too severe, it had become very blinkered. And that's what you find right in front of us. That they can't understand how he could be baptizing if he wasn't one of these with a name and with some kind of authority. He certainly didn't have a permit from them to be doing it. They saw no immediate reason why he should be baptizing. He was operating outside their generally accepted categories. But then it's John's answer, which is especially interesting. He doesn't really seem to answer in one way. He says, "I baptize with water." But Now, in the other Gospels, we read that he goes on to say, I baptize with water, but there is one coming who will baptize with the Holy Spirit and with fire. But John, the author of the Gospel, doesn't pick that one up on this occasion. He has something else that strikes him. And again, it fits in the whole drive of what we're discovering about John the Baptist here. His testimony. He says, I do baptize with water, but there stands one among you whom you do not know. It is he who, coming after me, is preferred before me, whose sandal strap I am not worthy to loose. How does this answer them when they're saying, why do you baptize? There are things that we could learn from this concerning baptism, the meaning and background of water baptism and so on. But John, the Gospel writer, doesn't do that. So we shouldn't stop there either. The slant that John the Apostle puts on this, the things that he picks out, is a very pointed way of dealing with the issue. It's as though John answers, sure, I am baptizing with water, but never mind me. There's someone else I need to talk to you about. Don't worry about me except in this. Listen when I'm telling you about this person. His baptism did relate to his preaching. But that preaching was all about the coming of the kingdom. And he said, you're getting hung up on this baptism. You're not listening to what I'm saying. My big message is that there is the Lord coming. Prepare the way for him. He's there. He's among you already. You don't know him. He's there, though. And look at him. Look who he is. He does come after me. But he's preferred before me. Because he is before me. Don't get stuck on this baptism issue. Listen to what I'm saying. The great thrust of my preaching. Yes, baptism is a, if you like, an enhancement of that. It's a development from that. But even that is still all about this person, the Lord, whose way I'm preparing. A little further, John was giving a further testimony. In verse 31, he says, I did not know him, but that he should be revealed to Israel. Therefore, I came baptizing with water. That's what that was about. To bring out, to provide the opportunity to announce the coming of this one, that he should be revealed to Israel. And so, in spite of perhaps the fascinations with baptism and how John's baptism fits into it all, that's not the thrust of this passage. We can get to it quickly when we say, okay, I do this, but this is what you need to hear. This one who is coming. And then just to touch on John's humility as well, it's something that I have referred to and that has been underlying everything that we've talked about already. John was fully devoted to this one task. It was to give a testimony. It was to tell everyone that what mattered was that they should go after someone else. They'd been coming after him. People were intrigued by him, fascinated by him, wanted to know more about him, and said, okay, the thing I can explain myself best with is to say, go that way. There's one coming. There's not many people manage that. And his concluding remarks and testimony drive that home vividly. You've perhaps become accustomed, and if you've been, if you've had the gospel read to you, and you've read it many a time, you've perhaps become accustomed to the closing part of verse 27. This one, his sandal strap I'm not worthy to loose. We learn that in those days, you would have a teacher, a rabbi, and he would be followed by disciples, as Jesus was later on. And they were very dependent upon the kindness of others to provide for them. But the disciples were, as we find on a number of occasions, they had to go off and get food and deal with different things. And that's the way a disciple of a teacher was expected to behave. He would do all sorts of things for his teacher. But the tradition has grown in Jewish teaching that there is one thing that a disciple was not, should not be required to do. One thing. He could go off and he could get food. He would have to pay it out of his own pocket or beg for it or whatever it was. One thing he should not do for his teacher. You can perhaps guess by now. He should not have to loose the sandal strap of his teacher, his master. John says, I'm not even worthy to do that. That was the work of a slave. He says, I'm not even worthy to do that. That's how much greater than I this one is who is amongst you. It's exactly that that John selects to drive home his point. There is one among you who is so great that he goes far beyond all of these things. Is that a testimony about himself, John? Well, he does talk about himself, but only so far as it is to elevate the Lord before the people. Only so far as it is to reiterate this point that he's been getting at all along. The Lord is coming. I must close for you. When you think of John the Baptist, I think there are probably different parts that you will remember, and many of you will have heard of him since childhood. And there are Bible stories that we remember of him. And there are different things that the other Gospels will include, and they have their importance. I just think, for example, of his stand against Herod, in Herod's sin that led to his own execution. But come to John's Gospel for a moment, and be sure you grasp this, that here is the first witness, John the Baptist, the first to bear witness among men, before Christ had even come to the fore, but concerning Christ. And see how single-minded he was about it. Throughout all of this, he is effectively saying to anyone who will hear him, he says, never mind me. Yes, it might be a spectacular beginning, but that's to draw your attention so that I can point you where you need to look. Never mind me, just listen to what I'm telling you. The Lord is coming. You've looked at the Christ from Isaiah, you've looked at Elijah from Malachi, you've looked at the prophet from Moses, but look at what Isaiah is saying as well. There is going to be a voice crying in the wilderness, you make straight the way of the Lord, that the Lord can enter in. Isaiah has told us this. And those verses, verse 23, John takes that from Isaiah 40, verse 3, which comes immediately after the great message of comfort to the people, that she will have done double for all her sins. There is one crying in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord. With an active message of comfort, the battle against sin is complete. How can this be? Because the Lord is coming. You make ready for him. And isn't that just what Christ has come to do? And all that still applies today. There is a great example for us. There is the message. We must hear that John is saying, Christ. You look to Christ. Just as Paul said later on, I preached nothing among you except Christ and him crucified. Then what about you? Men will come and they will ask you, what authority do you have to do this? You have the Christ-given authority to tell of him. Do you have him? Seek him out. Hold on to him. He is the one that matters. He is the one that is the Lord who will make all the difference. But bear testimony to him. There are some parts of the Christian world which place great store in giving testimony. Perhaps we should do it more. But make sure that it is the testimony in harmony with John's, that it's not just about me. Far from it. That as quickly as possible you can take yourself out of the picture and tell of Christ, tell of the Lord, this great one, as John later on said, when people asked him about this Christ, this Jesus, John himself, John the Baptist said, it's in chapter 3 of this gospel, he said, he must increase, but I must decrease. That's what this is about. And it's all about the Christ. This is the testimony of John. And the other John records it so that there will be a witness to the Christ that you may believe. In this Jesus, who is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. May God grant blessing on his word amongst us, his testimony today. Let us pray together.